Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have another founder that has done it multiple times, you know, and successfully so. You know, it's interesting how he's done it from like the capital raising side, you know, raising like crazy from VCs to then, you know, maybe more the bootstrapping side of figuring out how to achieve product market fit. You know, also we're going to be talking about how to be flexible and adapt to the new changes, as well as building a fully remote team and the rapid changes in the market. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Carlos Escutia. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alejandro. Pleasure to be here.
So originally born in the U.S., you know, family of entrepreneurs, you know, with roots out of Mexico. Give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up for you?
That's correct. Yeah, no, I was born into a family of entrepreneurs. You know, growing up, you know, firsthand, I saw my father basically building a business from scratch in the textile industry. And so because of that exposure, for me, it was kind of, you know, natural, right? Just to be in the place of solving problems and building something from scratch. And so, yeah, that exposed me to multiple things. I had the opportunity to live in both countries, the U.S. and Mexico, growing up. And so it was kind of a seamless experience for me.
So then in your case, you know, what was it like, the experience also of seeing, you know, the family going through the cycles of building and scaling a business?
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, for a lot of folks, sometimes that's a good thing. And for others, not so much. And I think that I saw everything, you know, across the board. My family was in the industry and in the textile industry space. And so with manufacturing facilities in Mexico, and when the Asian, you know, market entered, you know, Latin American markets, basically you plummeted the price, the prices of, you know, these products. And so effectively, a lot of businesses went out, and that, you know, forced my family business to pivot. Hey, you know, instead of manufacturing, we should get into trading and start building, you know, manufacturing relationships in China itself. And so that is kind of what expanded, you know, just the capability to understand what the challenges are and adapting to those changes fast so that you can continue growing, I think was a critical lesson, you know, at an early age.
So eventually you ended up packing the bags and went to New York, where you did your MBA at NYU. And then from there, you went into the investment banking world, out of all places. I'm wondering, like, during the investment banking years, what do you think were some of the things that you learned, you know, more towards pattern recognition, you know, with companies that work versus some that don't?
Yeah, that's a great question, Alejandro. And I think that, you know, the main thing for me was, you know, what it is like to work with, you know, Fortune 500 companies, right? The type of problems that you have to overcome when it comes down to data, you know, security, and just processes altogether. Everything is a lot more complex. Everything is a lot more detailed than what I was used to. But look, I mean, ultimately, it's the understanding that there are just so many markets out there that you're not even aware of. And once you get exposure, at least, you know, when I was in the investment banking side of things, to so many business models and the size of the markets and the problems that those companies have, you do come to realize that, you know, no matter what stage your organization is, you will always have problems, right? You have problems when you're a small company, you have problems when you're growing, you have problems when you're a mature, you know, a publicly traded corporation. The nature of problems just evolves, right? And you just need to be able to figure things out and work with people that have that mindset of problem solving, because they will always be there.
So then in this case, you know, for you, you know, you ended up, you know, working there, but then you saw the opportunity to go back to Mexico, you know, which was working for a corporate, like really launching there a corporate venture fund of 100 million. I mean, that's quite the turnaround of events there.
Yeah, for me, it was just marrying kind of both things, right? I had the entrepreneurial kind of side of things growing up, and then the financial services exposure working in investment banking. So the opportunity came up for me to join a newly created venture fund in Mexico City. So I relocated from New York to Mexico City to get that going. And it was a super interesting experience. I wasn't really into the you know, startup ecosystem in Mexico yet. So I had the opportunity to actually, you know, get to know it and familiarize with what was happening there and make a few interesting investments in multiple industries, right? But really the biggest thing was realizing, you know, this is the path, right? I got to get back into an entrepreneurial path. And that was kind of the springboard, you know, to do that.
So walk us through, how did that happen? At what point do you realize, hey, I think I gotta build my own destiny here?
Yeah, again, I mean, just being in the middle with a bunch of entrepreneurs looking to solve problems, interesting problems, you just realize, hey, you know, this is a lot more exciting than, than where I am right now. And so I partner up with a couple of people from Chile living in Mexico to start what is now one of the largest green banks in Latin America, called Banverde. And so Banverde really is an evolution of, initially we were looking to provide financing solutions to, you know, large renewable energy infrastructure projects. And then it shifted into, hey, you know, there's an opportunity with, you know, solar distributed projects where, you know, the financing is not there, the tax credits are not there, like the ones that you see in the US or elsewhere. So there's an opportunity to make an impact there and help in that transition. And so we launched this firm, and we raised some capital, and it is an ongoing concern. We are providing funding for small businesses to install, you know, solar panels and to help them lower their energy costs and, you know, accelerate this transition from, you know, fossil fuels to renewable energy. So that's been a very exciting ride. And so that's what we did. I mean, right after I left the venture fund, I did this, and then an opportunity came up to join a startup from the very beginning in San Francisco in the furniture space. And that's the reason why I relocated back to the States.
Now, it's quite the phone call, no, that you receive, because here's the phone call, you know, for you to join, you know, this co-founder, you know, in this new chapter, but you're also leaving behind, you know, a company that you also, you know, founded yourself. I mean, I'm sure that was not an easy decision.
Oh, for sure. But one of the things that, you know, you got to keep in mind is that there's certain things for certain people. And you know, I am one of those folks that really likes the challenge and is really always kind of, you know, tuned to where the opportunity is located. And if it makes sense, you know, not be afraid to chase it. Don't really marry to one place or one location. If you see an opportunity, if you really make sense of the upside potential of doing something that is exciting, you know, really go for it, right? So that was really my decision. At that point, my thought process was, hey, you know, we already got this off the ground. It's ongoing. You know, the value that I can bring to this project at that point, you know, it's in a way limited, right? Versus joining a new thing from scratch that is exciting, right? And so that was really kind of the thought process behind taking that step. And so I moved to San Francisco to get this going.
So what happened next?
So we started a company, and I joined this company as a co-founder and head of operations, a company called Casa One. So Casa One was a furniture rental platform, and we were able to raise capital from Axel Partners and Freestyle Ventures and a bunch of well-known investors. And really the objective was to provide a SaaS-like solution for furniture, right? Instead of you spending all this CapEx and furniture, especially for short-term hospitality companies, you know, turn it into an operating expense by leasing it from us with a tech platform. So that's what we set out to do. We scaled this company really fast. We raised, you know, a lot of money, close to $70 million. And, you know, we were serving customers like Airbnb and, you know, competitors to Airbnb in the same space, furnishing entire buildings all over the U.S. And so that business just scaled pretty fast, and everything was going very well right until the pandemic arrived.
The pandemic arrived then?
And it just, you know, it stopped every single thing around hospitality. And so our largest customers were in the hospitality space. And since we were not getting revenue from anywhere, you know, that company basically hit a wall. And it was not only us, it was every single competitor that we had, right? So ultimately every company had to pivot or, you know, shut down in that space. But as we were building Casa One, you know, one of the kind of issues that I came across scaling it is that we started hiring employees outside of the Bay Area, San Francisco, to be precise, because it was a lot more cost effective, especially in India, right? And so, you know, I had to deal with a lot of issues of how do you equip this, you know, team members that are not in office, and, you know, we still need to, you know, take care of them, ensure that they are up and running at all times, right? And so then I just noticed that there were a lot of companies were doing exactly the same thing as us, that were hiring in, you know, Asia, Latin America, Europe, because it was more cost effective. This was all before the pandemic. Then the pandemic arrives and it accelerates, you know, everything you have seen around remote, you know, distributed work from years to months, right? And so we were right there at the right time building this idea when we launched, where now everybody is remote. Now everybody needs to figure it out, work from home or, you know, whatever. And now you have to deal with all this IT, you know, complexity. How do you manage the equipment, deliver it, maintain it, et cetera? So that is really what put us on the map. And we gained, you know, traction pretty fast early on.
So I guess before we dig deep into Grow Work here, I want to ask you, I mean, with Casa One, what a turnaround of events. So you go from raising $77 million, like crazy growth, super success, to all of a sudden, COVID really, you know, hitting the reset for you. I mean, I'm sure that was for you too, at a personal level, quite the roller coaster of emotions and quite a journey for you. How was that for you?
That's a great question. And it is true. I mean, ultimately, you do try to separate it. And I think in hindsight, you know, you see it kind of like, yeah, it was the best thing that could have happened, right? But at the time, you know, it really sucks. That's the reality. I mean, it sucks that, you know, customers, you know, are shutting down, you know, you have to let go people and just to try to survive. And, you know, you have to manage expectations with your investors and deal with, you know, very difficult conversations, including with your co-founders. I mean, the infight and all that naturally happens when, you know, stress levels are, you know, that high, right? But look, I mean, ultimately, you do what you can. And at some point, you just need to take a call, right? Like, hey, is this going to go somewhere, or is it time for you to, you know, go in a different direction and just go for it?
So eventually you ended up going in a different direction, and here we are with Grow Work. For the people that are listening, what is the business model of Grow Work? How do you guys make money?
So Grow Work, again, was based out of my own experience scaling Casa One, right? And really what we focus on is on providing IT lifecycle asset management solutions for companies of all sizes. We work with, you know, startups all the way to publicly traded companies with thousands of employees globally, right? And so what we help them do is that we help them automate everything from IT equipment procurement to delivering these assets to their employees or contractors anywhere in the world in over 150 countries, as well as providing help desk support 24/7. Logistics solutions, retrieving, delivering devices, storing devices, managing end of life, needs, everything at the touch of a button through the Grow Work platform. That's in a nutshell what we do. It's a big need. It's a growing need as more companies go global by hiring, you know, remote or distributed workers or contractors. And we are in the middle of it all.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on, when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com, and we would love to take a look at helping you out.
Now, you've taken a different direction with GrowWork when it comes to financing the business, you know, especially having been used to raising all that money with Casa One, you know, 77 million, as we were talking about. You know, you are now, you know, used to, let's say, the VCs, the top VCs, you had the relationships. Why not going the hypergrowth route again? Why did you choose the bootstrapping route?
No, I mean, and it's one of those lessons, right? Going back to your other question of what was it like, right? Going through that rapid growth and then, you know, hitting a wall. I wanted to make sure that with GrowWork, we in fact were building a business that could sustain itself, that did not depend on investor money or external, you know, capital to make it work. That was the first thing. So instead of going and, you know, out of market and, you know, try to raise as much as we could early on, you know, we knew that this solution was a lot more complex. And actually, you know, it goes hand in hand with what my previous experience, because with GrowWork, we deal with logistics, right? We do have a SaaS platform. There's a lot of software involved, but you do deal with the real world. And that was my experience with Casa One, where we're dealing with the real world of managing, you know, furniture, storing furniture, delivering furniture. It's the same thing, but now in the IT space, we're managing the assets, the actual laptops, you know, monitors and all that stuff in 150 countries. So that is kind of the parallel to what we're doing. But I wanted to make sure that, in fact, you know, this was self-sustainable and we did not depend on any external capital. So that was my focus early on. And we really, for GrowWork, cannot raise that much capital. We've been bootstrapped, almost bootstrapped from early on. And we've been scaling, you know, pretty nicely. We are, you know, we have been cash flow positive on and off. You know, we are 100 plus team, you know, globally distributed. And, you know, continue to rapidly accelerate our growth. So it's just a night and day, which, you know, as you know, the market has shifted radically from the time when we were, when I was at Casa One, where it was easy to raise tens of millions of dollars. Now, you know, in today's world, it's so difficult that, you know, unless you're an AI and have a nice story and, you know, experience, you do see those funding rounds, right? But now it's a lot harder to raise capital. And so that is, that plays in our favor, because we build a business that, you know, has a great unit economics, you know, it's capital efficient, and it's pretty easy to establish a conversation with, you know, growth equity investor, venture fund, or strategics, and just show them, hey, this is what we're building, this is what we're doing, this is how big the market is, and how it continues to expand. So if we wanted to raise capital, it's just a lot easier these days. And the fact that we didn't raise at a ridiculous valuation early on, you know, also makes that possible, right?
How do you go to about managing risk when you are a bootstrap company? Because when you have, you know, VC money, you have a little bit more in the bank, you know, to take risks. What about when, you know, you don't have those resources? How do you go about managing risk and making sure that you're not making the mistake? Because mistakes, you know, when you're bootstrapping, you know, could be lethal.
Yeah, for sure. Look, I mean, there's level of, I mean, we're not 100% bootstrap, right? We did raise some capital. I think the biggest difference is, you just don't go out and raise a big round or the biggest round possible early on, right? You actually go the other round. You try to raise, you know, 250, 500,000, you know, just to prove and make sure that you have a business, that there is value, right? And once you have that, you know, you got the data and you're able to prove that there's something there, then, you know, you can figure it out and determine whether it makes sense to raise more, right? And in a more conservative way, instead of the traditional route of just raise as much as you can and you'll figure it out, you know, how to justify, you know, those rates or hitting those expectations, right? The growth expectations. So now, you know, the world has shifted in that it's not only growth what you're pursuing. It's actually, hey, are you making money? Are you actually going to be able to make money anytime soon, right? And so that has been our focus from day one. And because of that, we haven't been in the necessity to raise more capital since we have been organically growing from the same growth that we're generating. So I think that's the biggest shift right now. So what we have done, it's kind of what's happening with most companies these days, where it's not really grow at all costs anymore. It's like, hey, can you make money, right? And that's really what the focus from investors is in today.
Got it. So I guess for the people that are listening to, you know, how do you go about, you know, here the vision? So if you were to go to sleep tonight and you wake up in a world where the vision is fully realized, what does that world look like?
So look, we're building a next generation IT lifecycle asset management, you know, platform. What does that mean? It means that every single company is shifting to a cloud solution, to automating as much as possible of their day-to-day processes that they typically have to run, you know, internally, and that costs a lot and it's very and are very inefficient, right? So what Growwork is doing is that we're building a platform that is AI powered with the capability to predict what your needs will be in the near future so that you can always optimize your capital expenses and be a lot more efficient with scaling your company in a way that, you know, provides a great experience to any employee or contractor, no matter where they're working from. So, you know, really solving for what we do within IT, it's important for global companies today. And so, you know, the vision that we have at Growwork is you should have 100% control over every single decision that you make around your IT infrastructure without any gaps, right? What that means is you should have all the data that you need in front of you, and you should be able to take informed decisions to guide, you know, multi-million dollar investment decisions with the highest confidence possible. So that's what we focus on. Every single customer that we serve, you know, their budgets for IT, you know, are in the tens of millions of dollars. So it's not a small thing. And by us making that more efficient, we make a big difference in the trajectory of their growth.
And what about building a fully remote team? You know, there's probably a lot of people that are listening now having, you know, distributed teams, you know, maybe not even an office. You know, how do you go about that?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And actually, you know, I would say that one of the reasons why a lot of companies are embracing distributed work in a way, you know, hybrid work, it's because it's just cost effective, right? If, you know, you will see this, and you see this every day with our customers, or anecdotally, if you talk to other founders, you will know that they are hiring team members in Asia, Latin America, Europe, to do things that traditionally in the US would cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars, right? And for that same level of skill. And, you know, increasingly organizations are just empowered to do that simply because the tools exist today to enable that. And we ourselves are part of that ecosystem, right? Of a number of solutions out there in the market that enable companies to do this today. The nature of work has shifted dramatically. Its flexibility is demanded by employees, right? And it just makes sense from an economic standpoint for an organization to embrace that as well. And so that is the reason why, no matter how much you hear about these efforts to return to an office, there will always be this remote flexibility, right? It just makes sense from an economic standpoint and from an attraction and retention standpoint of the talent that you need.
So then for this as well, you know, what about adapting to changes? You know, because right now, market is crazy, you know, coming out of COVID, crazy valuations, you know, things are shifting. What about adapting to changes? How should a founder think about that? And also, how have you guys gone about that?
Going on what I was saying earlier, you know, that change that we have seen in the market really has fueled a lot of this, you know, flexibility that we're seeing. So one of the use cases that we see commonly with our customers are companies in the U.S. primarily that, you know, are downsizing in the U.S. simply because their costs are significantly high and they need to restructure those costs. And so what they do is that they just hire in lower cost economies. And that's just the reality, right, of the world we live in. And so, you know, the flexibility to adapt to a new world where your skill level has to be on par at a global scale and, you know, you need to be competing with the best of the best at that level, you know, it's a big change for a lot of people, especially white collar, you know, workers in the US. So, you know, you need to really adapt and understand now that, you know, opportunity is everywhere. And this applies to companies and to individuals. And, you know, that is what helps you to adapt to whatever, you know, is thrown at you all of a sudden, such as a market, you know, downturn, right? Where you're just forced to do this. And so, you know, just change and flexibility to change and adapt fast is really what, you know, makes or break anybody. And I'm trying to tie it to this idea of remote work because it's really what's fueling what's happening in today's world.
So now, if I was to bring you back in time, let's say to that moment where you were getting out of the corporate venture, you know, arm and going at it as an entrepreneur, let's say you had the opportunity of having a chat with your younger self and being able to give your younger self one piece of advice before launching a business, what would that be and why, given what you know now?
Yeah, that's a great question. The answer would be, you see a lot and you read about a lot, you know, how do you prove your ideas, right? And how do you get something to market? And the most valuable data that you can get is just really being out there in front of prospective customers as fast as possible, right? And really, you know, sell them an idea and understand what their problems are and really try to figure it out. What are the best possible solutions for those problems that they're facing? The big disconnect that sometimes happens is that you think of an idea, oh, this is going to be great, but you don't even know if what problem this is specifically solving, right? Without talking to those potential customers. So the sooner you can get to that point, you know, the better. And you know, I guess the big difference in connecting it to what we have done is that in my case, you know, I was scratching my own itch when I started, you know, Grow Work, right? Based on my own experience. So now you can just bridge that gap by just going directly to where you see the problems that you think you can solve with new technologies and, you know, really test those ideas out before doing anything else. Otherwise, you can spend a lot of time and money just to realize that, you know, that didn't even make sense to begin with.
Absolutely. So Carlos, for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
Yeah, you can reach out on LinkedIn or Twitter. I'm on both channels. Yeah, Carlos Escuchia, you know, growwork.com also. Yeah, feel free to reach out. And look, I mean, ultimately, you know, I'm always happy to connect with founders who are just getting started or, you know, I myself, I'm part of multiple groups here where we just exchange ideas and, you know, think about, you know, problem solving every day, right? It's what we do.
Amazing. I love it. Well, Carlos, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show. It has been an absolute honor to have you with us today.
Thank you, Alejandro.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening and see you at the next episode.